Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guests today are two young Advantage players. Rome's is a blackjack counter in his early 30s. We interviewed last on June 28, 2016. Currently specializing in hole carding and exploiting side bets on table games. He is a former stand-up comedian who also has a full-time job as a computer programmer. Bruce is a bit younger, works in healthcare administration, often teams with Rome's in various places. Rome's and Bruce, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for having us.
Now, I'm sure you all got who is who, but we'll work that out. Okay. Before we get to the questions for our guest, we have some questions from listeners sent in to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Either or both of our guests are welcome to chime in on these. Some of the emails contain multiple questions, and I'm picking and choosing. First one is from a player on how to act when he sees another player double for less. Should he offer to put up the extra money? Does the pit object to this? How should he approach it with the player? Richard.
Well, James Grosjean wrote a big article about this on, he calls it scavenger betting. And there is EV there, but a lot of times it's not worth going after because of exactly the reason of how does the pit view it. So I think it's just really a judgment call what you think you can get away with. Personally, I almost never do it. Sometimes with insurance bets or things like that, and mostly I think when I have actually done it, it's been in foreign casinos, but not much in the United States. How about you guys?
Yeah, I was actually really intrigued to hear what you would say. For some reason, my gut was saying that you wouldn't do it that often. I actually am a big promoter of it, though. I'm a fan of it. The scavenger plays, and I mean, it's situational, like you said. If the guy's got $5 out and wants to double down for $4, then you know, it's not really worth stopping the game and slowing your hands per hour down to get that extra dollar out there and, you know, try to get the edge on that. But I actually refer to this in the second article of the A to Z counting cards and blackjack on the Wizard of Vegas article section. And I called it scavenger plays right off of James Grosjean. And some of them are just way too much EV to let go, though, in my opinion. The one example I give there that actually happened to me, I'm sitting at a table. It's like true two. I've got like $40 out. It's not that advantageous yet. But the guy in seat three put all of his chips, $100, in the circle. So I'm just kind of sitting there going, get a hard 10, get a hard 11. Come on, you know, let's see something. So he did. He got an 11. Dealer had a 5. And I don't know this off the top of my head, but I know it's a good bet. But I went and looked it up for the show as well. That's actually a 61% edge on that bet. So, you know, just had my $100 ready, hoping he would get something like that. And, you know, he was about to hit. And, hey, you know, can I ride it with you? You know, if you're just going to hit it. And he's like, oh, sure, no problem. So, you know, and fortunately, you know, peeled off the 10, you know, dealer busted as well. We won the hand. But the thing that really strikes me there about the EV is a lot of counters go after, you know, 1.5-2%, you know, in the long run. And a lot of counters, whether they're weekend warriors, part-time players, anything like that, they, you know, they're making anywhere from $20 an hour, $100 an hour on, you know, average. And yet, on this particular play, instead of a 1.5, or like the EV on my hand, on my $40 bet true two, was like $3. But yet, just by, you know, paying attention to the table and seeing the opportunity arise, I got a $100 bet now with a 61% advantage, and I just made more than most people's hourly EV in one hand. So it's like,
actually, your hand, wouldn't it be more like 40 cents rather than 40 or 30
right,
cents
sorry,
rather than
my hand,
$3?
I'm yeah. And I have that written down in the article. It's the math is correct. The math, I assure you. But yeah, it's like, and now I'm not, and same thing I say there too, the disclaimer I like to give. I don't think you should go around and try to poach people's bets. I don't think you should, you know, hey, I'm going to double for you before they even act, or if they have a soft hand that it could hurt them. You know, like they want to, you know, 7, they get a deuce, they want to hit again, something like that. But, you know, to keep your eyes open for these situations, I think some of them, like that, for example, is just too profitable to let go.
Yeah, I think that $100 is kind of a sweet spot. Lower than that, a lot of times, I mean, if it's much lower than that, it's really hardly worth your time or the exposure that you may get because of it. And higher than that, it might start pissing off the pit.
Yeah, you know? Higher than that, I agree. It might start pissing off the pit, but lower than that, though, even too, the average counter. I mean, when we started out, and you know, we were red chippers and low rollers and weekend warriors, we were making $25 an hour each, maybe. And it's like, even if it was a $50 bet, that's still $30 some an hour. You know, you just, and if you get one of those every couple hours, you take your game to a whole new level, from going from $20 an hour to $50 an hour on average for a session. You know, if you can get a couple of those a night. And I've even had it, because I like to, you know, be real friendly and chat and make friends with everybody at the table. And that has awarded me a lot of good things, because I'll have doubling buddies sometimes. I've had this more than once where we explain to them, you know, hey, it's really good for you to double. You should double. And, you know, they're like, I just don't want to. I don't want to put more money up. Like, all right, well, I'll be your doubling buddy. You know, whenever you don't want to double, I'll double for you. And literally all the doubles all night. And it's like, that alone, you could play basic strategy, not even know how to count and do that, and be making a better hourly than most weekend warriors. And it's like, it's just, and I've never had a problem from the pit. I know a couple places we played stopped letting you do that because they were claiming there was debacles on it. But I think it's because people were getting aggressive about it.
Right.
And they were, you know, double.
Mm.
All right. For our listeners, that was Rome's monopolizing the conversation for the last 5 minutes. No, I was joking. So the next voice you hear will probably be from Bruce. Do you have anything to add on that?
No, I think it's just kind of supporting what he has said. We've had some opportunities kind of compounding on the buddies. You know, the nice part about having the buddies is you have the opportunity. They say, hey, do you want this? You can either say yes or no, or pass on the opportunity. So I don't have a whole lot on that. I think I'll kind of attack the next question.
I think an act really does come into play if you're going after that stuff. With the right act, you can get away with a lot more than...
Well, it's like 50% an act.
We have a somewhat related question from another listener. He was playing Mississippi Stud next to a player who had a dealt pair, and hence a guaranteed win. The player didn't have enough money to complete the full 3x bet on every spot, so our listener tossed over a green chip to help the ploppy out. When the ploppy won, he returned the green chip that the listener lent him, plus another green chip because of the guaranteed win. Our listener returned the extra chip. The win was guaranteed, after all. He wants to know if he should have kept it. Richard.
I certainly would have kept it. Yeah. I mean, I guess he's being a nice guy, but yeah, I would have kept the extra. And if it had been a premium hand where you were getting paid 3-1 or 5-1 or something, I would have kept that too. I mean, so.
Yeah, we kind of expected that answer to come from you, Richard. We've come across this several times, you know, having an opportunity to pass some money to the side and, you know, it being a known winning hand or even a known push or whatever the case may be. But kind of what we've done in the past is we've offered it back to them. If they refuse and say, no, keep it, then we're not going to fight. We're not going to hard fight to give them their money back. We're certainly, you know, in it to get that from them. But, you know, it's kind of ironic how frequently that comes about, where they're going to, you know, you're giving the money to a known winner and they're trying to pay you for it. So it's kind of funny.
And my only comment on that would be, yes, it was a guaranteed win, but you're actually exposing yourself to the pit, and you're making, so they're looking at, this might be a sharp player. So,
well, that's actually a fairly common thing, though, especially in Mississippi Stud. Like, every time we play, I would say almost every single session we play, there's always people at the table with short on chips and passing chips around to each other, because that's the one game where it's not like, you know, Texas Hold'em, where you're like, I've got ace king, give me money, guys, because that could still lose. But in Stud, you know, sixes are better. You know they're getting the money back. It ain't going nowhere. And I mean, to me, it's a fairly common event that happens.
And it slows the game down forever. I mean,
while they got to pull money out, yeah.
Yeah, or they don't have it and they want to call their wife. And I mean, it can turn into 10 minutes, you know, so.
And kind of the crazy part of that game, too, is, you know, you'll see people that are playing at a $5 or $10 table. You know, with a max bet, $10 base bet, you're looking at $100 a hand. People will buy in for $100, so they don't have the money on the table that's able to bet those hands. So that kind of chip passing happens pretty frequently from our experience.
All right, let's move along. Rome's was on our show in June of last year, and we had a bunch of questions to start out, some of which we didn't get to. So we're going to start off by getting to the old Rome's questions for the young Rome's. All right. First one. Do you have any good stories about doing everything right and it turning out all wrong?
I don't think we have enough time for that. Everything. I mean, and even from the last radio show, the 300 hours of losing we had, you know, we just reevaluated every single night, every weekend, redid the math. It's the same numbers over and over. And I mean, whether you can count for 8 hours or you whole card for an 8 hour shift, and we've had the exact same thing. And, you know, my philosophy is with APing is exactly like life. You're going to get out of it what you put in it. You're going to, and a lot of that, you're going to lose. You're going to lose. It's going to happen. You're going to lose over and over and over again until you don't, until you're proficient, until you're good. You know, you hit a long run, you hit enough time. And just like in life, you know, you're just going to lose until you don't. And the losses, though, are what teach you the most. So winning is real easy. Everybody can win, but not everybody can take a loss and learn from it and not say, this doesn't work. I don't ever want to do it again.
Well, I disagree that everybody can win. There's I know people, like early on in my career, I was playing video poker, and somebody next to me, there was this couple, and they hit a $4,000 royal flush. And they're, while they're waiting to be paid, their whole conversation was, they're going to buy a new car, and they're going to, you know, they use, because that was going to be the, what the money was going to be used for. And so, never mind that losing is coming. And so that's, and
taxes are coming.
that's not really found disposable income. That's bankroll. You can't spend that. But
I also had a friend that played for a very short time, and he, when he started winning, his hands would shake. He couldn't handle putting $500 a hand on the table. It just, you know, he just didn't have the temperament for it.
It's a really common thing, especially with poker as well. A lot of times the beginning players, it's a really big tell when they have like ace king, you know, their hands shake when they put the bet out because the adrenaline's running through it because they're really nervous about it.
Yeah. Also, I think the lessons learned in winning are more about the pit and sort of learning how to take money out of a casino, because you're under much more scrutiny when you're winning, and but those are different lessons, you know.
Yeah.
I agree, the emotional side of getting through long losing streaks is really tough, and some people are just not cut out for it.
And for some people, a long losing streak is 15 minutes. All right, let's move on. While hole carding, have you ever run into another team trying to play the same dealer at the same time?
Yeah, I guess we'll split this one. Yeah, I guess we'll tell it in chronological order of how that kind of happened. It's happened a few times. But I mean, it was just a regular day. I went up to a place that we normally go to, and I saw a dealer that I really liked on the table. And the table was full, so I went to kind of go check chip stacks and things like that. And I noticed a guy behind the table that I've seen at a lot of the similar tables that I like to play at. And then especially when I walked up to the table, he kind of looked at me and smiled. So, you know, it was kind of a acknowledgement, that we both know what's going on. And I'm definitely of the nature, I never want to draw negative attention to myself, whether it be on the tables, off the tables, with APs, whatever it is. And so, you know, I wasn't going to fight him for the seat. He was there first. It's his, you know, I'm not going to try to get in a big seat war debacle or fight other APs. You know, it's us against the house, in my opinion. So I went to the other side of the pit, and I started to look around for another game or something like that. And I looked over and happened to catch him looking at me like a teammate would. He, you know, he was looking at me and just kind of giving me a chin nod, you know, hey, come sit down. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, two seats opened up. I'm like, wow, that's that olive branch that he reached out and gave was really awesome, just to show that we were on the same page. You know, we weren't there to fight each other. And not only that, it shows that they're smart too, because I would rather play with a professional than regular amateurs that play the game, because they're going to slow the game down. You play with a professional, they're going to have their bets out. They're going to know what they're doing, when they're doing it. So I got over to the table, though, and he let me have what I considered the better read seat. And I was like, oh, that's really generous of you. Now I'm wondering, is he really doing that? Or maybe he thinks I'm just a table mate. But then it became really apparent a hand later when the guy to my right started signaling every hand after that, oh, okay, he's your reader. And then the guy in first base across from me was just staring me down, you know, evaluating what I was doing. So at that point, I kind of made three of them. And, you know, when the breaker came, we ran to the bathroom, and I just, you know, we all knew what each other, so I just walked up. Hi, I'm Rome's. You know, how do you get me? So we actually kind of exchanged some signals so that, you know, if I got a little bit of a better view of one, or, you know, their reader did, then we could all be on the same page, you know, and help each other out. And, you know, that we got back out of there, and that's when There was one seat left on the table. They actually had a fourth one as well. And that's when I texted Bruce before, and he just got up there, so I'll let him take over from there.
Yeah, so I was waiting in the wings, so to speak, waiting for my opportunity to get on the table. I was the only one waiting, as standard would be. I'm just kind of standing behind the table, just watching the action, seeing what's going on. Person in second base goes to stand up, so naturally I would think that that's my seat. So I go to sit down in the seat, and a female pit boss comes over, and she goes, wait a minute, that's reserved. You can't sit there. And I didn't throw a big stink, but I said, well, you know, I've kind of been standing here for a while. I would think this would be my seat, and some of the other players and, you know, kind of retrospectively kind of knowing what was going on. Some of the other players chimed in and said, well, you know, where's this theoretical list
from
that
the
you
other
can
team.
Sign up
yeah,
for? Yeah, from the other team.
Arguing for
it,
him.
It wasn't even Rome. So, so they were kind of lobbying for me to get on the table. I think they kind of had an idea as to what was going on but it just kind of made a joke, you know, where's this theoretical list that I can sign my name to get the next seat. So she comes over, and there was a little bit of an issue. The person that the seat was reserved for came over and said, you know, no, it's no big deal. I'll go play something else. So she moved on. I got the seat. It was what it was. The pit boss, the female pit boss, was a little bit fired up, just to kind of, you know,
more than a little
debacle.
I don't know what it was. She was having a bad day. She was mad about it.
Yeah, she was a little heated. So I got on the table, play resumed and continued. One of the first couple hands, I get my hand, I receive the signal, I place my max bet. She comes running over,
running
probably
through the pit,
two or three tables down, and says, wait a minute, like kind of slows up the action, and basically was saying that he was, you know, I was trying to pass post, I think is essentially what she was saying, that I saw the flop card somehow and saw what was on the flop and was trying to pass post my max bet. The dealer kind of was on our side of things and it was like, dealer was like, no, these cards are still in my hand. They haven't been shown yet. They haven't been exposed, anything like that. So, dealer kind of corroborated the issue. There was a little bit of heat at that point. So we kind of ended up letting it fizzle out and left the table. I don't know if you want to take back over and kind of give you the,
well, yeah, because she even said something else to me too. At one point, you know, she's like, well, is that like your friend? Because the seat debacle really got her fired up about something. And, you know, this is a place we frequent and we know there's no reservation list. We're top members there. We would know if there was a reservation list. And you know, so she was just real fired up and she's like, what, is that your friend or something? And I'm just like looking at her like, what are you talking about? She's like, oh, now you don't understand what I'm saying. You know, like she was really mad. So we went to the bathroom to discuss, you know, hey, do you want to like cash out, leave? Let's get out of here. We'll come back, fight another day. But when we got back out there, the other team was gone. They all cashed and decided that they had enough of that. Of her running, I mean, she ran through the pit like he was reaching in to grab the center of the rack. Like I thought she saw us read or something, and there's no way she could have. This was, I mean,
maybe the player that you preempted is a friend of hers or tips her, or you know what I mean?
You know, we know the other player too. They're a local that plays there often and we're friends with them even, you know, but it's like, yeah, I don't, she just seemed in a bad mood the moment she got in there,
yeah.
You know, but so we were going to cash out and that was our plan too, but we got out there and we played a couple, he cashed out and I was going to play a couple and cash out. But then I noticed she was the breaker. So everything, the regular pit were really good terms. Again, real friendly, always make them laugh, always, you know, try to, you know, give them a more enjoyable shift. And everything was happy-go-lucky. So I just sat there and kind of kept playing, and because I wanted to test, you know, kind of the waters as well and see how they responded. I didn't just want to run because sometimes that's a big indicator. They throw a little heat at you. But yeah, I just kept playing for a couple hours and it worked out. But that was probably the first time we ran into another team. We had that kind of craziness go down.
I've certainly been, you know, I'm old and blind, and I've certainly been in the situation where I've given up the good seat for somebody else I knew was a player just because I know they're going to be able to see better than I can, and normally I don't have any trouble picking off their signals. You know, actually, somehow the same signals sort of have gotten spread from across the country, you know, over the last 10 or 15 years. So, but yeah, and you know, sometimes there are some real assholes out there where seat wars do ensue. You know, there are guys with very bad reputations because they'll do nasty things, you know, just to get other players off the table. So
yeah, we've had that happen too. You know, but luckily they didn't really do anything to us because he didn't know what we were doing, but we were waiting for the good seat. He didn't know that we were, but he made it real obvious to us. He's like, well, why don't you go play that other table? And I'm like, oh, my buddy's right here. I want to play here. But that other table has so much more money. And I'm like, what are you talking about? The chip rack's a chip rack. If it runs out, they'll bring more. You know, he was just really trying to get me to play the other table. And when I sat down and started playing, he was real pissed. And we were kind of a little nervous about that and what, you know, if he would get real nasty about it. But I mean, we were waiting for a while. It was our seat, you know.
Yeah, I've heard stories about guys who, you know, will come by the table and say, if I don't get a seat, I'm calling surveillance, you know. And I mean, just all kinds of shit. And I had a guy turn me in a casino just because I was playing a game he felt like was his private domain. And he did that. He called surveillance and said, hey, you know, that guy's in the Griffin book. You know, he's a card. Fortunately, he said he's a card counter, you know, but
was this not a card counting game then?
Yeah, it was not a card counting game.
At least that's good. Because don't burn the opportunity, you know, and that's one.
Well, he didn't want to do that because he felt like it was his. You know what I mean? So he didn't want to burn the actual game.
But by drawing attention to a good player, just anybody being in Griffin for being good to a game like that, I would imagine is going to say, well, why is that? Why, you know, why is he playing that game then? You know, or just even to evaluate it at the smallest level, just you don't want them sniffing at those tables.
This was in middle America where they don't think that deeply into a situation. Yeah, you're right. I mean, if they were smart, they would say, well, wait, let's watch what this guy's doing. Like,
right,
he's flat betting. That doesn't seem like a card counter.
In video poker, we have similar situations that I'll discuss on another show. The one thing I would like to mention before we move on to the next question is that woman pit boss that Rome's was talking about, I think I might have been married to her once because her actions seemed real familiar to me. So,
accusing you of past posting all the time?
No, but running and screaming. Okay.
Two out of three.
You've Rome's, you've done some writing about blackjack. Writing about gaming is a skill that's been useful to both Richard and myself. A whole extra level of knowledge is required to write about things, and obtaining that knowledge pays dividends. Do you have any intention of continuing to write about gaming?
Yeah, actually we do. We want to put a book together. I guess similar, you know, I guess we're like the standard APs. We think, you know, James Gershine's awesome. And I personally love the puzzle kind of way sometimes he writes. And I love things like that. I'm a big puzzle solver. You know, that's fun for me. But you're absolutely right. There's a whole nother level of knowledge you need to know about it. Not only because you need to know what you're talking about if you're going to get quality information, but because once it's out there, it's static. And everybody will read it and judge it and correct you if you miss a comma and correct you if anything. And sometimes with my articles, I gave them there and they posted them and I don't know what happened, but I'm going to disclaim that the format got messed up and there's periods missing and it my OCD, it drives me crazy because I wrote that thing flawless.
Welcome to my world.
Yes.
50 years ago, I had an intellectual girlfriend and we played strip chess. Have you guys ever tried similar techniques to learn to play blackjack?
Oh, yeah. I also had a serious ex that was the wrong one first, and she was way too frugal, I think, for APing. So when I was counting, you know, I tried to explain it. She didn't want to know the math at all. And I guess that should have been my first red flag of the relationship, was that we're quite different in that regard. But the next girlfriend that I had was really awesome, super supportive. We had a shtick that was amazing. We would go to a casino and she'd sit next to me and take up an extra seat. And she just knew, you know, we got a really good routine. When I bet bigger, she'd, you know, hey, I want to play a hand, you know, let me know. Okay, well, you got to at least bet what I bet so we can cancel each other out. And, you know, we just had so many good opportunities to go from, you know, $10 to $250 on the table, you know, it's like, and things like that. But yeah, she helped me practice a lot. We used to kind of do checkouts where if you got the count correctly periodically through the shoe, then articles of clothing would come off.
You were rewarded if you did it right.
Correct. So I am a very good counter now, thanks to her.
Uh-huh. Because taking your clothes off was a reward.
Her clothes.
All right. There's somebody on the Wizard of Vegas who, whenever I bring up that similar subject, it really annoys the hell out of him. So,
when you bring up what, strip chess?
Anything related to sex.
Oh.
Like, I'm 70 years old, or I will be when this is aired. And so the idea that a 70-year-old man has sexual thoughts at all just drives him up the wall. And so anyway, I think that's amusing. But moving on. Richard and I have a small wager on a poker bot versus strong players sponsored by the Carnegie Mellon University's computer department. And the game is Heads Up, No Limit Hold'em. The competition is scheduled to run until January 30th, which was a while ago to anybody listening, but we're taping the show on Friday, January 27th, which is a few days before the competition ends. So we're discussing something that has the potential to make us all look very bad because our listeners have the benefit in hindsight that we don't have here in the studio.
And I already paid off the bet.
You did.
So I hopefully it'll be like Paddy Power where they paid off the people who bet on Hillary and then...
Now, this computer program, Libratus, is quite a bit ahead, and it appears almost certain to win. Now, in some sports, like football, near the end of the game, you see Hail Marys, which are high-risk, high-reward tactics. It increases your chance to win, but it also increases your chances of getting buried. Assuming the players are still behind on the last day, do you see them changing their strategy, possibly going all in much more often than they would earlier in the match, trying to catch up? And other than going all in much more often, are there other techniques that they could use to try to catch up?
Wait, before you answer that, are they playing with their own money, or is it a tournament situation where they have funny money chips?
It's funny money chips, but they are playing a free roll, basically, where if they are up after X amount of hands, they win, and they're going to get real money.
Right, so, I understand. Yeah. So, I mean, that's an interesting question, because they can start using tournament strategy where the computer may not.
One of the things that I also noticed, when like they had an all-in hand and one of the players busted, whatever, at least to me, because I watched a little bit of it. It looked like when something like that happened, it reset the players to the exact same amount of chips after like every hand. Like they both had 20,000 almost all the time that I was watching, and after an all-in and stuff like that, because that way you don't get the stack differences where if we go all-in and you win. And yeah, sure, they give me more funny chips, but you know, now you're doubled up. No, it looks like they re-level so that nobody's ever got a huge chip lead on each other. The format's actually really interesting. It's not your standard poker, because what they do is they have, say you and I are playing against the bot, Richard, and what happens is we will get the same hands in reverse in separate rooms. So if I play the bot and I have aces versus kings in another room, you're gonna play the bot and you're gonna have kings and the bot's gonna have aces. And I think that's really interesting too, because I think that is fair. I like that. But at the same time, this isn't your standard poker then. This is definitely a different kind of competition, and slightly, I guess, in my favor, you know, towards the bot. But I wouldn't have paid him off yet.
Wait, why do you say that favors the bot?
Because the bot can make profiles, and for the record, I'm actually a fan of the human players. I know they're getting killed right now, for sure.
I bet on the humans, but...
Yeah, I actually would, too.
It's not too late to get in on this.
What kind of odds are you giving me? They're down a million.
But, I mean, is the bot understand the tournament strategy? Because at some point, the bot can just fold every hand and win.
Right, and that's what another thing about the players, you know, that they're going to probably go all... Like, when I watched, they were playing real soft. At least a couple players I watched, a lot of times heads-up players, they're going to play real aggressive. I mean, they're pre-flop raising every button, continuation betting every flop. A lot of the best heads-up players I've played against do that. They play super aggressive, and a couple that I were watching, they're playing real small ball poker, and they were trying to figure out holes in the bot. And... But it looks as though they changed it, because they said they found some. They found some things they could exploit, but after a day or so, it was gone. So I imagine the programming just has an RNG and, you know, tells the bot, today you're going to play aggressive, today you're not. And it's random, so you don't ever know. You can't figure the bot out because it'll be random. But I was really surprised to see them about halfway through the competition playing real soft still. Because if you figure that, and they're down so much, like you said, Bob, they're going to start banging away playing big ball poker where they're basically going to start shoving all in almost every hand. But if they have X amount of hands left, they need to be careful about how much they're down and how much they can actually have time to come back.
Have either of you two ever played against bots? How did you know they were bots? What did you do about it?
Yeah, I played a lot online back in the day, and we used to play against bots all the time. They're easy to spot. They acted extremely fast. And they always had very calculated same bets. And the speed was the big red flag. they would play instant because the computer would crunch the numbers, say, this is what you do. And we loved playing against bots because you could exploit the programming. They're all static variables in a calculation. You know, if they put you on some kind of hand, and if you just simply overbet the pot, it makes it not worth it monetarily. You can purposefully manipulate that calculation so that it makes it not worth it for them to call. And that way you could just run over, or they would profile you. So if the first blind level you played real soft, you folded a lot, you didn't raise, then for the rest of the tournament, after they profiled you, they would think whenever you bet, you had it. So then you just play, you know, once you identify that, you just play real soft at the beginning, and then you just bet everything after that, and they just keep folding to you.
Huh. So I didn't realize that the bots were playing the tournament, so I thought they were mostly in the cash games.
No, it was mostly heads up. Yeah, I guess I should have qualified that. I played them a lot on the heads up tables, tournament style.
Hmm.
Okay. On social aspects of APing, anything, any experience with that, Bruce?
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, we could probably do an entire show on this topic. We've come across a lot of different situations, and we could venture into all different types of topics. But just a little piece that I'll touch on. I know, you know, Rome's talked a little bit about the alcohol factor in the past, and we found that to be very effective for us.
Oh, no, wait. Yeah, you brought that up because that was one of the things that got more feedback than anything else was people saying, I can't believe this guy drinks as much as he says and plays competently. So you're his teammate. So
yeah.
So you feel he plays his A game even after how many beers?
You name it.
I mean, there's a line. And again, I'm glad this got brought back up. We do not go out and get hammered every time we play. That is not the goal. We don't. I'd say 85% of the time we don't even have a drink. Not a drink. You know, I'm very, very much a fan of play sober. You know, it's just these situations where you can get in where, you know, if you have the situations that pop up where, you know, if you have a few drinks, you can do whatever you want in this casino. And that, you know, we recognize those and just capitalize on it.
I think it just opens a couple doors that may not be opened otherwise in certain situations. It
doesn't bother you to be partners with a fish?
It, you know,
I mean, we're kind of both that way, so it works.
Who are you asking there?
One of the things that gets brought up in almost every interview with a surveillance person is the person drinking alcohol? I mean, yep. That is something they look for. So,
and
so
not just a tonic and lime.
And yeah,
so, I mean, so is that disarming to them if the answer is yes?
Right. Oh, it is. Absolutely. Right. Yeah.
So that's, I mean, that's, you know, one thing that we found to be effective for us in certain situations. Again, we're not, you know, every day we're out doing this. This is not the case. I know. Are we over the alcohol, or we want to get into that anymore?
No.
If our listeners were interested in it last time, why wouldn't they continue to be interested?
Ask away. Yeah, I think we'll touch on it a little bit more on some of the other questions that come up. But one of the things that you know, we've kind of run into over the course of the past year and a half or a couple years or so, you know, the social aspect, again, we found very effective for us to be open, to be friendly, to be, you know, let's let these people in and kind of let us, you know, let them know a little, not know what we're doing, but, you know, let them, you know, be okay with us, you know, be friends with them, know a little bit about our histories and our backgrounds and stuff like that. And that's been effective for us in establishing rapport with Pitts and with other players at the table. You know, we've got regulars that we play with that, you know, they're ploppies. I mean, they're ploppies that we play with on a regular basis, and we're kind of probably
they're friends
the same
too.
Way. Yeah.
Like, they really genuinely are. We just like to make friends with everybody.
But what's happened in those casinos once you have been backed off? I mean, the danger of that is you basically can never go back because they're not going to forget you.
Sure. I mean, I will say at this point, we've been able to establish a fair amount of longevity doing this so far. And, you know, some things have potentially changed, and, you know, not necessarily on our statuses, but just on the construct of the games and such. So that's kind of come up, but we haven't quite come across that yet.
I mean, we've had heat, a lot of heat, hole carding sometimes, but we've never been backed off a hole carding game, and we've been doing it for years. You know, and it goes, I think I touched on it the last time, was, you know, they're at work, the dealer's at work, the pit's at work, the other people are there to have fun. So, you know, and it's more fun for us when we get to laugh and joke, and I love telling jokes, love making people laugh. So if I can do that, it makes their work day better. It makes my experience better. You never have a problem getting a comp. You never seem to get heat, you know, and it's almost like I like to compare it like Daniel Negreanu in poker. He was one of the best guys at this. He would take someone's money and they would thank him for the opportunity to play with him every time. You know, he was such a nice guy that people would just they would forget the fact that they were even losing, and they would just love to play with him. And he did that so well.
So no, wait, you just mentioned you never had a problem getting a comp. So you're playing with players' cards.
Yeah.
Well, but you said you've never got barred for that. But are you doing that when you count cards as well?
Counting cards is a little less nowadays. We do. It depends. You know, if we're out in Vegas and we're staying at certain properties, we'll use a smaller spread to give them action and stuff like that. And so we will play on cards and give them action certain ways and stuff like that. But if we ever go to play for hardball or any decent money, we usually don't play on cards for card counting. Because that's just too, that everybody's looking at all of that. That's just too,
right.
It don't matter what you do and what kind of act you have. Sometimes you walk in and you're not going to, it's not going
to
happen.
Right. Especially in Vegas. Vegas seems to be the worst place to count cards.
Oh yeah.
Currently.
Kind of changing the pace a little bit. You know, it's still in the social aspect of it. This was a kind of an adaptation in our game that we kind of ran into and adapted on the spot with doing, you know, within, I think we'll get a little bit into more detail. We have some sub teams that we kind of run within our greater team. But I personally, just based on some of the makeup of the relationships within the team, I was kind of the one that ended up playing the lone wolf role, more frequently than not. So, when this first started and a lot of the places that we go, we're able to be attached, you know, socially, in our home shop, so to speak, we are not necessarily attached anymore. You know, Rome's and I are no longer, friends, so to speak. So we truly play as we don't know each other. We're playing buddies. But
he's a ploppy table mate.
Ploppy table mate. So, but again, just kind of based on that. So that was an interesting thing for me that I've kind of, you know, adapted to and learned how to kind of deal with over the course of the past couple of years, is being essentially by myself and detached from the rest of my team. So yeah, I'm celebrating for the table and stuff like that. But you know, we walk out of the casino differently. We don't, you know, go eat together.
Don't play at the same tables.
Don't play at the same tables sometimes. So, again, socially, it's funny when we show up for work, we're not, you know, on a team, so to speak, but you know, in the background we are.
I'm interested in what you said about sub teams. What is that about? You have teams within the team?
Well, it's kind of a friendly jest thing where, you know, we have, because I play with one of our teammates. I'll just say I always seem to play with. I don't want to get in too much detail, but so we're like linked. We're a pair, you know, and so we always go and play together. And that's kind of what he's referring to. Then after that is, since we're the linked pair, we don't always want to have the same faces on the table all the time, you know, day in, day out. And but it's okay for her and I to do that because they know we're a linked pair.
I see what you mean.
Yeah. So that's
so
kinda,
it's not like separate bankrolls or anything.
No,
like
no,
that.
It is one team, one bankroll. Right. You know, when we say the A team and the B team, it's just in jest and kind of, you know, good fun and who's that's, usually linked.
It's funny you say that because we literally were talking about the A team and the B team 35 years ago when I started.
That's so great.
Some things never change.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, but A team was on television at that time. Yeah. It's no longer on TV. The Bruce, telling people you work in healthcare administration wouldn't seem to be too threatening to the casino, but Rome's, you telling them you're a hot damn computer programmer, that means to most people you're a pretty smart dude and you know math and you might be good at these games. So does that mean you don't tell them that, or what do you tell them, or can you say?
Computer programmer? Bob, I'm in banking.
Excuse me.
No, that's pretty much how I would handle that. I usually don't say that. If I ever mention computers, which I loathe, I say I'm IT. You know, they see a young guy and they think, oh, yeah, you're IT. I do not fix people's computers. I did that all growing up. I got every phone call from every family member. But yeah, so I pretty much don't tell them I'm a programmer.
Bob has a headset here that he can't get the mic to work on Skype. So there you go.
I have a very high contract
rate. Now
Bruce
is waving his hand. Either he's going to fix my headset or he has something to say. I don't know. Are you going to fix my headset?
I would love to, but I don't know if I have that capability. Just kind of another kind of a quick side story on the social aspect. You know, you guys brought up the occupations and how that kind of plays into it. That has come to light at the table at times. We've had other players at the table, you know, seeing and doing what we're doing. You know, if we've got a whole card game, you know, well, how are, you know, what are you
betting
do for
real
a
big.
Living? You know, you're betting big. How are you betting this amount of money per hand? You know, you make six figures, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, well, you know, so you know, you kind of learn a way to squash that. And it was funny, this just happened actually fairly recently. This person kind of just brought it up and said, you know, you're a young guy, how are you betting what you're betting? And I looked over at a stack. I said, you have just as much money on the table as I do. You don't, you know,
you're
just
betting smaller.
Yeah. So again, you know, it's just kind of, again, adapting to those situations and scenarios, learning to squash them. Cause again, you know, you don't want that to be brought up to attention. You know, you just kind of learned a way to handle that conversation, squash it, and let it be dust.
Same as the employment, you know, same thing. Just squash that. I'm in this. It's not computer programming. That's that.
I used to say they would ask me what I do, and I would tell them that I sell life insurance. And have you thought about your family if something happens to you?
Bye.
And, man, they do not want to talk about it at all after that.
That's I'm going to put that in the book of repertoire.
And if they ask you where you got your money, inheritance.
Trust fund is always a good answer.
That's
Doesn't everyone have one?
Yeah. And so just they can't check it.
Or I hit a big hand. I love to also say, I hit a royal a couple months ago and it was like $50,000. So I'm playing on the house's money. You know,
I actually used that one last week to great success. Although I did not get a mailer, so who knows? We're going to take a brief break. We're going to have a short commercial. We got lots of questions for Rome's and Bruce. We'll be back shortly.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. In February, there's Money Madness jackpots going on all times. The major jackpot starts at $10,000 and must be hit by $25,000. All players playing with a card on any machine are eligible to win. If you've been playing the game when it goes off and you're not the lucky one who hit it, and you've been playing at least a buck and a quarter in the past minute, you will get $25 in free play. The smaller jackpot runs between $1,000 and $2,500 and is expected to be hit approximately three times a day. The sixth class in the current 10-week semester of free video poker classes will be on Wednesday, March 1st at noon in the Silverado Lounge. This lounge is the first one you come to when entering from the parking garage. The class is 8-6 Bonus Poker Deluxe Ultimate X. In Ultimate X, you earn multipliers for the next hand based on any paying combination you receive this hand. This game returns 99.70% if you play perfectly, which necessitates many different strategies based on the size of the multipliers, and 99.67% using a one-size-fits-all multiplier strategy that we'll be presenting in class. The game is found 25-cent can play, meaning $25 per play, although it is slightly lower EV than the double-double bonus Ultimate X found on the same machines at the South Point. The variance in Bonus Poker Deluxe is much lower. The strategies between the two games are fairly similar, although certainly not exactly. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Bonus Streak Ultimate X. This is a 10-coin per line game where you get a series of multipliers based on what you earn this hand. You need bigger hands to receive multipliers, typically three of a kind in a game without wild cards rather than merely a high pair compared to Ultimate X, but you get several multipliers in a row. The strategy is much more complicated than regular Ultimate X. On the Wizard of Oz site, there's a citation for an academic paper by Gary J. Kohler, which explains the math behind the game. Should you wish to develop your own strategy for this game, this paper is required reading.
All right, we're back. We're talking to Rome's and Bruce. Next subject I want to talk about is side bets of lucky ladies. Now, when you do that as a partnership, do you use one side count or two?
Yeah, that was a pretty cool evolution to our game several years back. We're essentially running two counts each separately and communicating that information amongst the two of us. One of us will run the high-low count, and obviously the main bet is correlated mostly to that, so we'll run our main bet wager off of that. And then the side bet, you know, specifically for the lucky ladies, we're running the tens count, and the tens count is running for the side bet, and then also the insurance correlation. So,
Well, the tens count geared towards ladies where, you know, the first queen of hearts is -4 instead of 2 and things like that. It's a little bit more specialized to get an extra percent or two out.
Are you finding lucky ladies with more than a $25 limit?
No, but the funny thing about it is it's, again, just goes back to that doubling scavenger plays and things like that. You know, when we were red shipping, we were making $25 an hour, $20 an hour. Now, the ladies that we found on the place that we played with the number of decks, the penetration, everything like that, ended up being like another $30 an hour. And we underestimate everything because usually when it triggers like that, because we're friendly with everyone, again, another benefit, you know, hey, I haven't had a 20 in 10 years. Here, put $25 on your bet too. And he does the same thing. So now we get 4 lucky lady bets and we get $100 out on the lucky lady bets. And that's that, again, we didn't even calculate that into the EV. We just knew that that was going to be extra. And that was, you know, we try to pay attention to the number of bets you get per hour and things like that. But, you know, essentially just by doing the lucky ladies in conjecture, it enabled us to play together because, you know, the, when we started out, that was kind of what we wanted to do at least. But also it more than doubled our EV, you know, on an hourly level. And that, and for, I mean, for young counters starting out, that's huge.
Yeah. Back then, I assume you're betting more than that now.
Yes, so. Yeah.
Because you're also taking up two spots at the same table, right?
Right.
So
right.
Well, and that was the funny thing, too. We went from, you know, counting separate tables, both playing an individual high-low count game, making X. We doubled our EV, and we doubled our spots because we've got two, you know, we doubled our EV because of the lucky lady side count, and we've got, you know, two exposures at the same table, so...
Hmm. Well, yeah, you're going to have covariance with that, but, like, I think what he was trying to go with is... Playing at the same table with the two counts, we didn't find a big issue with just because we could double our EV by doing that. If he goes and counts his table and I go count my table, you know, we're going to make $25 an hour. If we
well,
play together,
no, you're each going to make the $25 an hour plus whatever plus you would bet on the lucky ladies using
right.
the high low.
Using the high low, right? Which is it's still effective, you know, six and a half true count, but it's And the insurance, too, was nice to have an exact, you know, almost exact, I guess.
Yeah, no, I can see where this is a great thing for kind of low rollers.
Exactly,
but
yeah.
But at some point, that's the problem with most of these side bets for advantage players is that they just don't let you bet anything on
yep, right.
most of them. So
the EV's real low.
And if you're doing something sort of more advanced where you actually catch the double queen of hearts, you yeah. know, and know you're going to. It turns out that draws a lot of heat if you start hitting two queens of hearts.
All the time, yeah. I know exactly what you're referring to.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's not like you can do it every shoe or whatever.
Sure, but
you,
it's
just
sure nice
the
to start with one.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a situation, actually, where I bet two hands with the lucky ladies, and the first two hands, the first two cards were queen of hearts, and the pit boss was standing right there, and that was the beginning of the end, actually. So.
All right, now we're going to talk about a side bet that sounds the same, but it isn't. The Lucky Lucky side bet. Now, you first came across it, you knew it was beatable, but you didn't know exactly how. So what did you do?
Yeah, we knew it was beatable. I basically knew everything like this is all about effective removal. So I ran to the bathroom real quick and just looked up the effective removal for the side bet. And I can't remember if there wasn't a count on there or if it wasn't balanced, the site that I was on, because I just wanted to use a balanced count. So I ended up just off the effective removal, just making the count up. I think the 7 was -2, the 6 and 8 was -1, everything else was +1, I think is what it was, so that it would be balanced. And then we ran out and ran the double counts at the table and saw how it went. And I don't know if, you know, it was one session, so it's hard to say whether or not we were just getting lucky or not. But I mean, we were spot on. Whenever my dictated, we bet it. Here come the 6s, 7s, and 8s, and you know, and he was running high low, and go figure, we did really well in the side bet, and we got creamed in the regular game as per usual.
Goes back to that doing everything right and having the wrong result.
Yeah, there you go.
So you didn't go home afterwards and then analyze what that count was worth? And...
No, yeah, I did, but it was in a place it's not really available to us, and actually I don't think we've ever played it again. So I didn't put too much time and effort into it because I knew it wasn't something that we'd probably really ever play too much. But I mean, I wanted to know the EV and what we did, and you know, if we did the right thing, and we did, you know, and there was a little bit of a better count that was unbalanced, but mine was still profitable. It still worked.
Told us in an email getting ready for this that you once had a crazy breakdown trip. Tell us about that.
This, yeah, I mean, this trip, we could go on for hours about this trip, but...
How about 6 minutes?
You got it. So, not all bad things. It was a very interesting trip, and of course, it's one of those things you look back on, and it's like, wow, it's crazy that happened to us, but it's a great story to tell. So, it was wintertime. You had some snow and bluster that comes along with that. Wasn't horrible, so we were making our trek out to
Weekend trip.
It was our semi road trip, not real far, but a drive nonetheless. So We're sitting at the table doing our dual count, and the power goes out. The whole casino.
And not the emergency lights were on. We're talking you could reach in the rack if you wanted to. It's a blackout in here for about 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Now, so, I've never seen that happen personally.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in blackouts, but there's always the emergency lights.
Exactly. I've seen the emergency light once before. This was a complete blackout. Machines off, everything. It was pitch black inside because they don't have windows. It was pitch black inside of here for about 3 seconds, and I couldn't believe you didn't hear more rustling and tussling from people doing things they shouldn't be.
So, so that happened. We kind of looked oddly at each other. Nobody seemed to, you know, act on it or anything like that, reaching into the tray, and we moved about.
Or we'll never know.
Yeah. So we went on about the rest of our trip, left the casino, and weather started taking a turn for the worse.
It was a whiteout. It was bad.
It was pretty ugly. So it was middle of the night. We had some obligations we had to get home to the next day. So of course we had to make the trick. We couldn't stay overnight and just say we'll drive home the next day. So we had some things we had to get home to. Rome was driving at the time. I'm sitting in the passenger seat, and we're on the highway. We look over, and you know, we're going probably, I don't know, 40 miles an hour.
Not very fast, obviously, because it's a whiteout.
70 mile an hour highway.
In just the one middle lane, because the others were all gone.
Right. So we look over to the on ramp. There's a bus, a tour bus, merging onto the highway. And
it's got a head of steam on it. It looked like it was, you know, going faster than it should be. And my thought was, well, I know trucks, you know, sometimes they still speed when it's snowing out because they, you know, not only do they have 18 wheels, they have all the weight, which keeps the pressure on the ground, and they can still get their friction then, so they can still drive normal. And I'm like, so maybe this bus is not having the problems we are, because we're sliding all over the place. But this bus did not slow down, and it got to the point where they were basically just going to plow us, right, T-bone us, totally in the side. And I just did my best and kind of swerve drifted into the regular fast lane, which was completely covered and gone. And amazingly, they missed us by about 6 inches. And not only that, we kept the car on the road. So we didn't go off or have to, you know, we were able to keep driving at least.
So we're kind of rehashing that, you know, surprised that we're still on the road and driving and didn't get hit or anything like that. And it just kind of happened to be one of those perfect storm situations. I believe a phone call came through. So we were kind of distracted, rehashing the events that had just happened. And sure enough, the gas light on the dash comes on and we're out of gas. So we break down on the side of the road, you know, again, middle of winter. So,
and we were on a toll road. So there wasn't another stop for like 30 miles. Mm. But the thing that saved us was we were under a bridge of a crossing road. So we climbed up the side of the hill, mountain, whatever, onto this bridge with no sidewalk, but at least
this is the middle of the night, right?
Oh yeah. This was like 3 a.m., 4 a.m.
Jeez.
And then we walked a mile down that road to actually get to a gas station and get 1 gallon of gas.
That's enough.
So we buy the container, buy the gas, make our trek back to the car, put the gas in, go to start the car back up, and sure enough, a light on the interior had been left on. So
the car didn't
dead.
Start.
So we have gas. The battery's dead. Cruiser comes pulling up behind us.
Yeah, thank goodness. We were about to call AAA or something, but then a cop comes rolling by right. to see if we're okay.
Right. So cop comes pulling up behind us. He comes and starts. We give him the rundown and, you know, well, why don't I, you know, call a tow truck for you guys? And we just kind of told him, hey, we just ran out of gas. You know, we've got gas now. We just need a quick jump. Can you jump
Yeah,
for
he
us?
didn't want to jump us at first. And I'm like, why don't I call a tow truck? We've got cell phones too. I mean, I've got the cables. Can you just maybe turn your car around? There's no one else on the road because it's terrible. You know, so...
So he kind of reluctantly pulls around in front of us, you know, front to front, and we hook up the cables and stuff like that. I get sent. We're in Rome's car. Rome's is driving. I'm the passenger. I get sent into the trunk of Rome's car to fish the...
Through the back seat because the power was out, so I couldn't pop the trunk.
Through the back seat. So I remember being, you know, knees on the back seat. The back seat's folded down. I'm in there. I don't have any light. You know,
I mean, he might have had his phone, but that was, yeah.
He had a bunch of stuff, you know, Rums has got a lot of hobbies, so he had a bunch of stuff in his trunk. So I'm kind of shuffling through the trunk to get the jumper cables out, and I start hearing some voices, and he goes, you know, it's the cop, and he goes, hey, what are you doing back there? Like every 15, 20 seconds, hey, hurry up, come on, you know, we need to get going.
He started getting real snarky, like, get out, get the cables now, you know, things like that.
So, and in the meantime, unbeknownst to me, the cop had given a nice little wink to Rome and said that, of course, he was going to be pulling a practical joke on me. So I'm in the back and I'm getting flustered because, you know, cops pushing us along. And I finally get to the point where I can't find these damn cables. And I just popped my head out of the trunk and said, why don't you effing come look for these cables? It's your car anyway.
And he sees me rolling laughing, you know, at that point. He knows that he's been had a joke played on him. But that was hilarious. I'm so glad the cop thought that one up.
So,
police cars have cables in them? I mean,
well, this was good thing. This was in the years before civil forfeiture.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, we didn't say we came from a casino, but so we're about halfway through this terrible night, by the way. And again, nothing crazy. Like, again, we didn't get hit by it or whatever. The power went out, but it's just this conjecture. Like what else couldn't have happened? So, funny that you noted when we said we got a gallon of gas, you go, that's enough. Remember I told you we're on a stretch of highway without another rest stop for 35 miles. And I got a car that gets okay mileage, about 30 miles of the gallon, and we got 35 miles to go to get even to another stop. So we start venturing down the road, and we think we're going to run out of gas again. You know, we got another 5 miles to go. It's on the line. It's on E. And we're like, oh gosh, we're, you know, rolling every hill we can and things like that. We do get off to the exit, though, and we go to the first gas station, which is in a real convoluted. It wasn't just right off the exit, of course, and it's closed. All the pumps are off. We thought maybe the credit card machines readers would still work. We could get gas. No, it's closed. And this was my personal favorite of this. I look up, and right next door is a Wizard of Oz antique store. And I'm just like, Only another AP or somebody would really understand. That's ridiculous. What are the odds? Exactly, right? And
100%.
Apparently.
So we walk by the store. We end up walking down the road. Another cop sees us. We end up getting to the next gas station, getting our car filled up, and go home. But it was just one of those crazy, nothing could go right again. Prepare, do everything you need to do, and stuff just goes wrong. So it was, you know.
It sounds like a story that would happen to my partner who one time ran out of gas three times in the same day because he ran out of gas, called AAA. They bring a gallon of gas. He put it in the car, and then he just forgot that he had to go to a gas station. So he drove for 30 miles and ran out of gas again, called AAA. Again, the guy, you know, brings a gallon of gas.
Wait, same guy?
Same guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he runs out of gas a third time, and it's the same guy. And the guy said, you better go to a freaking gas station because I am not bringing you any more gas. So, yeah, he was kind of absent-minded. He's still kind of absent-minded, but he's a lot better now than he used to be.
We have a teammate kind of like that. We call him the Fanner.
We're going to have to wait to the story of the Fanner till the next time Rome's and Bruce are on. We're almost out of time. I got one more question on this last story. Where you had this 3 seconds of total blackout. When it came back on, did you see the dealers hunched over the center of their racks protectively? Or were they just waiting for it to come on? No big deal.
I actually, that's the first thing I looked for too. A couple of them did do that. They hunched, they covered. Our dealer and a couple other ones around us, they were just in bewilderment. They were looking up at the ceiling and they weren't covering the racks at all. And I was like, that's what I mean when we said that it was black for 3 seconds. And I can't believe people, you know, you don't always run into the nicest or honest people in casinos. And I can't believe there wasn't scuffles and all kinds of stuff and, you know, $1,000 chips missing. And
all right. So we've been talking to two nice, honest people, Rome's and Bruce. And we're going to close this episode. But they've promised to stick around, and we're going to tape another show today, which you're going to hear in another month or so. We just don't know when it's coming. But this has been a lot of fun. Thank you both.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for having us.
Richard, how can people hear about our shows?
Well, first of all, we welcome your questions. You can post them at gamblingwithanedge.com or facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge. You can email us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. You can get the show delivered to you automatically every week. Sign up at iTunes or Stitcher, YouTube, or even at gamblingwithanedge.com. And if you want an archive of every episode, you can find that at bobdancer.com.
All right. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Rome's. Thank you, Bruce. Go out and hit Royal Flushes, everybody. Good day.